Hello and welcome to the final bell, the official Geelong Cats podcast. We are brought to you by Panther Tyres. Check out the guys at Panther Tyres for anything you need for your cars, tyres, whatever. Stokesy's done it. They're brilliant, aren't they, Stokesy?
Unbelievable. Good people out there. The good people got a coffee while I was out there as well, which is always nice. And they babysit Wilbur while they get done. So take your kids out there. They've got a gun.
A babysitting service to Panther Tyres as well. No, they don't. But check them out for whatever you need for your car. We really appreciate their support right throughout this season. I am joined by Matty Stokes and also Scotty Gallen. Hello, Scotty.
Gentlemen,
it's wonderful to have both of these men with us. We're going to talk footy. We're going to talk plenty of Cats from the weekend. A couple of little concerns we need to just address. But then we're going to talk some finals. We're going to have a chat with John Aaron as well, the member for Lara, former Victorian Minister for Tourism and Events. He's going through a battle at the moment with, he's been diagnosed with Parkinson. So we're going to talk to him about that.
Then we're going to dissect your 40, Cameron.
You're going to get
off lightly, mate.
We're having a whole segment dedicated to it.
And what you'll do is you'll suggest 50 other names that should be in there.
No,
none of you will suggest any names that shouldn't be in there.
You and the other 60-year-old selectors that probably fall asleep at half time.
Yes, we will get to that later on, along with your questions as well. We do love all of the listeners sending in the questions. It's great to have that interaction. Let's talk Sunday afternoon football, Geelong versus the Sydney Swans. Just simple equation, the Cats locking away top four spot. The Swans have battled through injuries galore, struggling along. Nice, easy win for the Cats. Built some form heading into finals. And the Swans didn't read the script. And the Cats were not awake to start the game. And all of a sudden, it was a tight, hard tussle that eventually the Cats got the win by the 6 points. But, whew, Stokesy, that was hard work.
It was hard work and hard to watch, Cameron. Look, it is the last game. I mean, they had a lot to play for, so you can't really say they just went in there to, you know, get through. But I think the last couple of weeks, you know, and you don't want to be putting all your cards on the tables before the finals, but you've got to go in there with a decent amount of form to go into. We're playing Port Adelaide, who a lot of people have underestimated, you know, over the year, but they've been on top all year for a reason. And I think the last couple of weeks, maybe, you know, the clubs have figured out how to, you know, stop us going forward and being able to get Hawkey one out in the forward line, because I think it's over the last 2 weeks it's sort of been, we found it a lot harder to get through to midfield and then getting out into Hawkey one on one.
Now, Cameron, I'm not always glass half full, but I'll give a optimistic view for you. The Dangerfield thing going to full forward when he wasn't having a good day, I'm loving it. I mean, obviously, he turned the game. That is such a weapon that the Cats have. When you can get the sense in the midfield, it wasn't working for anyone. But then to be able to just go, all right, clear it out. Patrick, do what you do. I mean, I know the rest was pretty ugly, but I take a lot out of that.
Yes, true. I no longer think, and I've felt this all year, I've been fairly consistent on this, I don't think it's a weapon now that you just pull the trigger on in a game. I think it is the starting lineup. Geelong are a better team when Dangerfield is playing deep as a forward. Tommy Hawkins gets better looks one-on-one because of it. Dangerfield is constantly a threat. Even if he's not on the end of it, he is very stressful to the opposition defenders. Gary Rowan gets better looks at it when Dangerfield's down there. And I think the midfield has a greater sharing of the load and works more efficiently and more balanced. And then you use him at times, Danger, for, I'm talking only, say, 30% midfield time. I don't think it's the weapon you go to now. I think it is the way, the norm.
Yeah.
They're a better team.
I agree with that, Cameron.
So what, the no pressure in the midfield, that's dropped off significantly. The back line, which we've lauded rightly, but I'm getting feedback on the
don't blame the back line.
No, Scotland, I'm not.
For the weekend. Bruce Dool would have stopped Tom Papley.
I think I think, though, a lot of the times in our backline, Cameron, is that we're quicker to try and find a kick than we are to find our man.
Very good point.
And what I don't like is this kick to kick, let's stand up in the back line. And then I'm not going to – you're not calling anyone out, but we don't have the best users in the back line. So eventually it falls apart, and then Abel Sydney were able to then just absolute transition into their forward line pretty open. If we did that to a Port Adelaide, there was a lot of times where Sydney, you know, it just didn't work out. But we did that against Port Adelaide. They're skillful players. They're not going to fumble. They're not going to miss a target. They're not going to miss Papley, who kicked 1-4, 1-5, whatever it was. So I just there's some concerns there in the sense of the way that the back line try to have a kick mark game when I don't think they're actually skillful enough to actually execute that.
I agree totally with that, Stokes. I don't that kick mark game when Geelong were playing their best football throughout this season and the time where I got so excited, and it is rare for me to get so excited and I declare the Cats the premiership favourites, and I think they're genuinely going to win the premiership at times throughout this season. That kick mark style was not their first instinct. It was an option they could go to at different stages of a quarter or a game to control the tempo. But their first intent was move it quicker, take the game on a bit more. That's I'm with you 100% there. However, to defend the defenders a little bit, that midfield on the weekend was absolute subpar as far as their ability to defensively transition, their ability to stop the Swans controlling the ball, the ability for the Swans to just open us up. That was awful through the middle of the ground.
Agreed.
The Swans, they looked as though they were a top two team slicing through a team who was 10th on the ladder, not the other way around. Yes, I agree. The style of play from defence, I like it a different way. But gee, we need to be so much better through the middle. To stop what you're talking about, you're spot on about Port Adelaide. If our midfield and our high half forwards and even our half backs a bit allow that transition through the middle of the ground and boys through the middle of the ground from Port Adelaide, they won't give it back to us. And we'll be 8 goals down by half time and the game will be over. So I agree with you.
So there were 3 pretty big ins in the midfield as this just sort of happened. Yeah, Ablett, Selwood and Stephen came in, and now with all of them, Ablett and Selwood looked good and did their roles. But so was the mix out? Was it, you know, was that, did that play a part?
Yes, but I mean, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. Jack didn't have a good game.
No, Jack didn't.
But it was also Duncan and Dangerfield and Menegola.
Guthrie was a bit down.
Oh, I thought Guthrie was good. I thought he was still one of the good ones.
Yeah.
I thought Menegola wasn't his impactful self on with the number of possessions he had. So I reckon our regulars were way off as well. If it wasn't for Joel in that third quarter, Joel gritted his teeth.
Oh, he was
and
good.
And he got two or three clearances, went back with the flight. It was him again who got us going in the middle of the ground before it then allowed the move of Dangerfield to work out. It shouldn't always have to be one of the greatest captains and greatest players ever in Joel to do it. Others far earlier than that should have gritted their teeth and said, no, this is not the way we're going to finish off our home and away season. We've got to be better through the middle of the ground.
Well, talk to me about the ruck. What's happening? And we need to make a decision, don't we? Is Stanley fit?
We should have made a decision weeks ago, Scotty.
I agree. So, exactly. So where are we at? What's the situation?
I think Stanley will get first crack at it. That's just my feel. I don't know if that's the right decision.
He probably deserves it on earlier form, but can he body stand up? I mean, what's happened to Sav? Does he go out now? Can he play forward?
I don't think Sav completely locked away a spot again on the weekend. I thought the week before against Richmond in a bad game for the team, Sav took a step forward. I don't think he took another step forward against the Swans.
Yeah.
And can I bring up the use of Mark Blitzaps? He did the wing and he did a bit of Mr. Fix-It again, but had minimal possession. I mean, what are we thinking coming into a final series? You send him back, or is he Mr. Fix-It? And we run the risk that he doesn't impact the game.
I know we've
gone too far with the experiment of Harry Taylor and Lockie Henderson backline holding it up. I think if you were going to make the change, you made the change 2 or 3 weeks ago. You've kind of locked into that now. You've kind of locked into that. They're your key post. I do feel sorry for Mark Blitz, and I love Blitz, and I'm really glad that you guys put him in a 40 because there is no one in the competition that can do what he does in so many different positions. But I feel like he is our one part that's just lost. He should be our lock and concreted into a position, and then the team should be working around him. We shouldn't be trying to find positions for two fellas who will come into the end of the crease. And I'm not. It's not about Harry or Hendo because they played bloody amazing. And Hendo surprised me more than anyone. But he's nearly the best fullback in the competition.
Yeah. It's a dilemma.
I think I'm with Stokes in the confidence in them will be, okay, against Port Adelaide last time, they handled it beautifully. Harry beat Dixon. They had this plan. They knew predictability that it was going to Dixon. I'm worried that Kenny will have seen that. Kenny will have understood the Cats played it perfectly and Port Adelaide played it badly. There'll be something else thrown there. So I suppose I've slowly come round because of Hendo and Harry's form this year that Blitz can work as that. Blitz is still, I know he doesn't have a set position, Stokesy, but he's still the glue that holds the whole team together. So his transition movement from the wing, his ability to go in the ruck, his ability to get forward and all of that actually glues a lot of the team together. It allows defenders to be more proactive. They set up their, what I think we used to call it the web or the zone, or that sort of formation. Blitz is still crucial to what they do. I worry that Port Adelaide go really clever in that forward line Port Adelaide are able to move the footy, that Harry gets caught one-on-one with Dixon with no support, but then some of those smaller creative Port forwards could create a little bit of havoc, and maybe then Blitz is called on to get back, but then where do you move Harry or Hendo to? So, it may be just a case of what looks to be bad. Worry of what may or may not happen in that first final. They've been bad the last 2 weeks, the Cats.
Yeah.
Let's put it that way. But so now we start doubting what's been working so well for them throughout the year.
The peak of their powers was that week where they fixed up Port and St Kilda, Port in Adelaide. So there's got to be a bit of a warm, fuzzy feeling. They know how to play that ground, that opposition. You'd hope that plays a factor in being feeling better this week, next week.
They're going playing them in the season and going playing them in the first final.
Yeah.
Complete different makeup of that. And I think Kenny is a bloke. And congratulations to Kenny too. The team finishing top.
Genius.
Well deserved, Kenny. I just think he's a genius coach. So he would have studied it. Obviously, over the last couple of weeks, they would have known that they're probably going to be coming up to Port. The way you beat Geelong, if I was a coach from another opposition, how can you expose the back line? How can you get your back line not to be going off your man to then go help out Hendo or go out Harry and trying to isolate Dixon? Because if you can get Dixon one-on-one, he won't mark it every time, but he'll bring the ball to ground. Then you've got Robbie Gray, you've got Rosie, you've got some really good young
Zach players. Butters, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, you've got to put Butters in there because you're all Australian. But,
you're onto me today, aren't you?
That's what Kenny would be doing. And that's what they're, if they can get through this, you know, they're one game away from a grand final. So the amount of work that would have been going into how to expose that back line.
Yeah.
And which is bloody hard because they're all good players and they play well together. But when they don't, it falls apart pretty quickly.
What about the little man? He's, you know him better than everyone else, you two, but he had a look and he looked nice, moved quick. He had a look about him that this month's going to be pretty interesting for him.
I don't think the Cats don't win that game without Gaz playing. He was, some of his body movements and little, I noticed Stokesy, and it might have been the goal he kicked, or it might have been another one where he ended up passing. He had that that low center of gravity explosion away from a pack, which I haven't seen for a little while. It was got me very excited.
Takes you back to 08 when he was unbelievable. What a lot of people will be going, well, we're kissing Gary's bum here, but the reality is, as an AFL player, the ones who are clean, the ones who can put their teammates in the right position, are the ones who are the most valuable. So Gazzamon only had, I think it was 15 or so possessions, 15 to 18 possessions. But every one of these possessions were able to put his teammate either out in a position that they're better than he was, or in a position that we could go forward without having too much pressure. And it's just, that stuff is what you pay the big bucks for. They're the guys that you need in your team, because in a final, the guys who fumble, the guys who look up and have a glance, they'll get found out, where people like Gary, there's a reason why he's one of the GOATs, is because he's as clean as they come.
Yeah, and Stacey, it's a good point you make about ability to, with his kicking and his handball, to set a teammate into a better position. And come finals, as you know, the opposition you're playing are always so good in a final as well. It's the reason they're there. So they defend even quicker. They shut down something. If a play's unfolding, their ability to shut it down quicker than a home and away game is there. So if that ball is given out to a player in some space and it's slightly behind them and they have to hesitate a second or so, that allows the opposition to scramble, get set, the player breaks down. But Gary just puts people onto the footy into a spot where they can take it in stride, still be looking up, scanning, hit the next target, and you're through what the opposition are trying to scramble and cover, and that gives you an opportunity to score. It's a crucial thing. It sounds so simple. Of course, you know, you want to kick to a teammate in a better position. But only the really good players in the heat of finals could do that. And Gary showed glimpses of doing that on the weekend. Now, of course, he's got to do it for another whole month. But, it's not a case of us just loving Gary blindly. You see things and you go, yeah, that makes everyone else on the field better for Gary having been there.
We've talked a little bit of the negativity, but there's one person we need to give a bit of love to. Mr. Tommy Hawkins, Mr. Coleman himself.
Oh, yeah.
Coleman, he's done it.
How fitting is it? Tommy. I mean, yeah, he's the most unselfish pull forward you find. He's won Geelong's goal kicking. He won a flag by himself in 11. You two.
Hey.
You helped a little bit.
Calm down, Scotland.
He needed this on his CV in a way, didn't he? I mean, just to top the whole thing off, that he is a superstar.
He's a genuine superstar. And as I think, was it Larry Donoghue the other day, Stokesy? And good on him for talking out. Larry doesn't come out and talk a lot. Saying that he thinks Tom's been harshly dealt with by Geelong supporters and is one of the greats. I think he said, well, no one will ever top Gary Senior or Doug Wade, perhaps, but Tom sits there at number three, comfortably ahead of all the others. And Larry's spot on.
I mean, he's comfortably above us.
Yeah, for some reason, there are Geelong supporters out there who've had this bee in their bonnet about Tom. Oh, he doesn't do this, he doesn't do that. Since 2011, he won the goal king, I think, every year. Would that be right? Or roughly year for the Cats. He's been All-Australian multiple times. He had that one year where he had that horrible back injury and basically couldn't bend over and still tried to battle his way through. He has been an incredible forward in a game now that has team defences and multiple defenders all crashing and caving in on those key targets. He's dealt with it, he's fought through it, and he's continued to play at a high level. I mean, I'm with you guys. Let's just sing the man's praises about a wonderful career that is now includes a Coleman medal and just a bloody great club person as well, Stokesy. I mean, he's everything you want. I don't know why. Some people don't give him the love that he deserves.
And everyone knows, if you listen to podcasts, that I love me Hawkey. You know, Red Wine Hawkins, I've been calling him at the moment. but there is no better person at the club. He is the epitome of what Geelong Football Club should be based on, and it's good people. And he is that to a T. I mean, you wouldn't get a better husband, you wouldn't get a better father, you wouldn't get a better bloke at the footy club that walks around with not only the older blokes and the Paddy Dangerfields and the Joel Sells, but then also then mingles with the young boys, then mingles with the support staff. There is no better that I've seen in my time at Geelong Footy Club. So congratulations, Hawkey. It was an amazing effort. I still was a bit worried when, you know, Port still had to play on Monday night and there was 11 goal buffer. For some reason, I was still concerned, but it's been a great effort and a great cherry on top of what he's able to achieve so far.
What did we make of his karate kick mark?
What the hell was that
karate kick mark? It was a mark.
These umpires.
That was a shocking decision. He wasn't happy, the tomahawk.
I started having to talk about it on Channel 7. I thought, oh, geez, I'm going to cop it here for being biased because it's Cats. But then I watched the replay and thought, nah, there's no concern about being biased here. That was just a bad decision.
A terrible decision.
There was no studs up. It was blokes allowed to mark the ball. First Coleman medalist, as we all know, as Geelong fans, since Gary Ablett Sr. in 1995. 13th of all time to win it for Geelong. But just the fifth since 1950. Just to give the other Geelong winners, I will run through them. Larry Donoghue, Doug Wade, obviously Gary Senior, Noel Rayson, Lindsay White. These are leading goal kickers for the competition. George Maloney, Lloyd Haggar, Cliff Franken, Percy Martini, Teddy Lockwood, and Eddie James. Way back in 1897 and 99, Scotty. So well done to the great Tomahawk.
Very, very well done.
We've got to take a break. I want to get to some questions later on. John Aaron's just about to join us. Did just get a little nugget dropped through. Breaking news. Our old mate, Stokesy, Stevie J, Dogger Johnson, was coaching against the Cats on the weekend in the beautiful red polo for the Swans. He's heading back to the GWS Giants.
Oh!
As an assistant coach.
Him and his mate, Dave Matthews, must have been getting that into it. I think someone like him is just he's just a genius, to be honest, when it comes to football. He's one of the smartest brains I've ever come across. So GWS are going to be a lot better off of having him around, and also, you know, Toby Green, to be able to get those two mingled together, that'd be an interesting conversation. But it's great work by Doggy. He deserves
the Giants might actually move the ball a bit quicker and get more than 12 entries a game. My condolences to Dean Cox, though.
He lost
his little buddy.
Dean Cox loses his drinking buddy. I've heard they've been on great form in the hub. 64 days of continual drinking. I've just thrown a bluff under the bus. But sorry, Coxie.
There's nothing else to do, Stokes. I don't blame him.
Bernsie told me that. So, Doggo, if you've got any issues about it, tell Bernsie.
So, Stevie J heading to the Giants. A little bit of breaking news for you. I'm sure it'll be old news by the time this goes to air, but just a little chestnut for you. We're going to take a break. John Aaron's up next, and then we'll get to your questions a bit later on.
Hi, it's Joel Selwood from the Cats. While we all support different footy teams, one thing we can all get behind is making good environmental choices. Momentum Energy is owned by Australia's largest generator of renewable energy. So supporting them means you're supporting Aussie renewables. So make the right call by joining today at momentumenergy.com.au.
Welcome back. It is great to have you with us on To The Final Bell, brought to you by Panther Tyres. Before we get to our next guest, and looking forward to chatting with John Aaron in a second. Don't forget, digital is in Deakin University's DNA. With 40 years of experience in distance and online learning, discover why they're the number one Australian public university for overall educational experience. Premium, proven, loved. Study online at Deakin. Now, as I mentioned before, we're going to be joined by the member for Lara, and also, most importantly, a lifelong, or we say nearly lifelong,
nearly lifelong supporter. Nearly lifelong.
John Aaron, great to have you with us, John. We'll say an honorary lifelong, because I reckon even when you were born and you hadn't yet come to Australia, I still reckon deep down you love the Cats.
Thanks very much, Lingy and Stokesy and Scotty, for having me on this podcast. I know that you've got many dedicated fans out there, and why wouldn't you? I mean, what an exciting time, you know. earlier on, a few months ago, we didn't even know whether we were going to have an AFL competition. Now we're in the finals, and I think us Cats supporters are blessed with having been in the top four now most of the times in the last, I think it's about 12 in the last 14 times, 14 years that we've been in the top four. So, you know, we're looking good. I can't say that we're totally confident, but I think we've got Port Adelaide's measure, and we've got some really good talent coming back in, and you know, I'm a big fan of the Cats, and they're all wonderful in their own right. But I've got a particular liking to, I don't know whether it's the red hair, but Gary Rowan is a champion for me. He's fantastic. And Brad Close, what a champion coming through the ranks. So quietly confident next Thursday, Lingy.
Well, I like what you're saying about Gary Rowan, the red hair plus the similar speed to me. Very similar players.
This is a setup, clearly, John. You are paid to say that.
Now, John, you are all powerful, we know, down here. But even you couldn't get the game at GMHBA Stadium in the finals. We've had to move it all the way to Queensland. But no doubt you've been sitting in front of the TV every time the Cats have been playing throughout this year.
Absolutely. You know, look, it's a sad situation we find ourselves in. But, you know, having a look at the numbers today, COVID, we're suppressing it. And regional Victoria, no cases today with a 14-day sort of like a rolling count of 14 days. In the last 14 days, there have been 1.1 cases. So which is fantastic. It means that we can open up sooner, but it's not going to be for the finals, obviously. But, you know, I did the contract for the grand final to be played at the MCG until 2057. So, I mean, I'm really devastated that we can't have it. But now we've extended it for one more year because of what's happening this year. But, you know, we are the footy capital. We created the game and we deserve to have the games here. And I look forward to it next year, obviously.
Well, I can't wait for being able to go back to the footy, having crowds there. We've got you on to talk Geelong, of course, but we've also got you on here to talk something a little more seriously and unfortunately. You were diagnosed with Parkinson's in December last year and you've spoken quite openly about it recently. Yep. How are you going? How's the health? And do you want to talk to some of our listeners about what you've been through with the diagnosis?
Look, it was devastating to find out that I've got Parkinson's, and obviously Parkinson's is a degenerative neurological disorder which progresses year by year, and each individual has a different reaction to it, and depending on its aggressiveness and progressiveness. And, you know, leading up to the diagnosis, I knew there wasn't something quite right with the body, and the body's a unique thing. It's like a well-oiled machine until it goes wrong. You know, as human beings, all we do is put food down one end and dispose of it down the other, and the rest happens naturally. And we take it for granted. Our health and well-being is taken for granted. But COVID has brought our attention focused in on our personal health and well-being, and obviously the health and well-being of our loved ones as well. So leading up to this diagnosis, I had a bulging disc in my neck. When I was a minister, and obviously you know the story about when I had a cardiac arrest in 2016, also when I was a minister, and you know that caught me by surprise when I died for 3 minutes laying on the hospital floor at Geelong, and you know I didn't expect it. I was a fit, healthy 52-year-old being active, and what got me was my family history, and you know for the 3 days after I had the cardiac arrest, there was a prominent media coverage of it, TV, radio and print, and the next 3 days in that time there were middle-aged men all across the nation inundating emergency rooms getting a heart health check. And I thought, you know what, that's what this is about. I'm going to turn a negative into a positive for the wider community and shine a bit of light on some of these diseases that are affecting our communities. And that's exactly what I thought about Parkinson's and you know, that you don't have to suffer in silence. There are support network services that are available for people with Parkinson's and also their families and carers. And you know, with me, I thought it was a nerve damage that I did through the bulging disc incident. Dr. Hugh Seward, who's a fantastic doctor, treated me for that. He direct cortisone injections to the neck and some painkillers. In a couple of months, that was gone. Luckily for me, I didn't need an operation. But there were some residual effects of it that I thought were from that bulging disc. Like, you know, I had pins and needles in my fingers and my right side, and my right arm wouldn't swing. And my family would say when I was walking with them, why don't you swing your right arm, staying still? And I couldn't do up my buttons and of my shirts, and shaving was difficult. And I felt a little bit depressed. And I couldn't put a finger on it. So my colleagues at work noticed, and you know, in my walking, I was shuffling my right leg, and they noticed it. My family noticed it, and I thought I'd get a checkup, like you know, practice what you preach, mate. And so I went to the GP and got a checkup, and he booked me into a neurologist and a neurosurgeon just in case I needed an operation on my neck, thinking that's what it could be. When I went to the neurologist, you know, he made us walk ahead, and I asked my wife to come with me because I was a bit nervous about it, as you do. And so he walked behind us and sat down. He said, "What's wrong with you? Tell me about what's wrong with you." And doctor googled me. I said, "Look, I know what it is, doc. I'm stuck with nerve damage in my neck. Can you just fix it? You know, I need an operation. I'm nervous about it, you know. Let's get it done. I'm ready for it." And he said, "Look," he did a couple of more reflex tests on my right side and on my left side. And he said, "Look, there's no easy way to say this. It's got nothing to do with the nerve damage from the bulging disc. Unfortunately, you have Parkinson's." And, you know, that set me back. I looked at my wife and she looked at me, and we were both taken back. And I didn't quite know much about it, except Michael J. Fox had it. You know, and Muhammad Ali had it, and so for me it was an absolute shock. There was a million things going through my mind, as you can appreciate, you know, and what's this about? Is it going to kill me? What's next? And so on and so forth. And so he explained to me what it is, and he said there's some treatments and medications that can help with some of the symptoms. It's a bit like a makeup on a pimple. It doesn't get rid of the pimple, but it covers some of the symptoms associated to it. So that's what Parkinson's is. For me, it's now part of my life until there is a cure. It's the medications that I'm on are helping me tremendously. And, you know, 18% of people with Parkinson's are of working age under 65. So there's 27,000 people out there in Victoria and 80,000 nationally who have Parkinson's. And today's news report, and it's trending on Twitter, scientists and researchers have indicated that as a result of COVID, unfortunately, 40% of people with Parkinson's who contract COVID don't make it. They are very susceptible to a fatality if they get COVID. But what also happens is if people survive, even though they don't have Parkinson's, the neurological damage that COVID does to the brain apparently is going to cause Parkinson's diagnosis going forward. So there are literally, could be the next pandemic of Parkinson's coming worldwide if, you know, 10 million people have contracted COVID. As a result of that, if a couple of percent of those people contract the Parkinson's disease, before you know it, you have another pandemic of a disease of some sort. So, look, this is quite serious. And, you know, traditionally Parkinson's have a walk in the park event every year to raise some funds and some shine some light on Parkinson's. And this year is different, and we're doing a virtual walk with the community where the people can partake in that. But before I get to that, I just want to highlight, obviously, the importance of men particularly who neglect their health. They don't listen to their body. They say, "Oh, I'll sleep it off. I don't want to be injured. Doctors are bad news." No, get checked up. You know, don't suffer in silence. If there's something wrong with you, whether it's physical or mental, go to your doctor, get treatment, because treatment is out there and life will be a lot more easier. Ironically, after having found out, being diagnosed with Parkinson's, it was a sense of relief because I could put a finger on what was wrong with me. Because it's frustrating not knowing, thinking that, you know, what the hell is going on with my body? And now that I know, I can deal with it. I can tackle it head on. So, yeah.
John, and you've taken on an ambassador role as well, 27 for Parkinson's, an online fundraiser that you just referred to that asked people to walk 27 times across 27 days in October. Stokesy, you'd be doing that already, wouldn't you? But you'd be able to take on that challenge.
No, I've got
27 times in October.
I've got that covered, mate. I'm on the treadmill every day to get away from the kids. But Johnny, mate, you've been a massive support for the Geelong Footy Club, but also the players. Obviously, I've reached out to you a few times over the years to help out on a few occasions. But you're a rock star in Melbourne. Let's just talk about a little bit of the way that you gallop around the events in Melbourne. One particular time I'd like to bring up is the day that we were at the F1s in Melbourne, and it was myself and Joel Selwood and Tom Hawkins. I think Harry Taylor might have been there. And we tried to get into a private party, and we got knocked back. And then all of a sudden, this little European man comes out, taps us on the shoulder, comes in with me boys, and goes into the private parties. How are you turning into the Mr. Big Dog of the Melbourne team, Johnny?
Look, you know, they were the good years, and clearly in my time as the Minister for Sport and Tourism and Major Events, and veterans, of course, which was a fairly active portfolio. And I think there was, in one year, there was about 1,000 sporting events that I could have attended. But having said all of that, it's all a legacy that I hope that we've left in that time as a minister, that we've done so much for sport and recreation. And, you know, I'm looking forward to that $105 million redevelopment of the fifth stage of Cadinia Park, and that's going on tremendously. And I can't wait to actually go to a game when that's completed, when we've come full circle. And I call that the MCG of regional Australia. And we should all be proud of it. We should all be proud of what's been achieved. And certainly, you know, I'm proud of my Cats, and I'm proud of my footy. And I'm proud of the way that we've grown the major event side of it as well in terms of this state. And look, we're going through a tough patch at the moment, Stokes. There's no question of that. But once COVID is done, we will get back to being the sporting capital, the major events capital, the theatre capital, and the jobs capital. We will do all that. But we're just going to get over this COVID stuff. But yeah, they were fun times. I recall them.
Surely you're going to have a wing named after you on this this stadium, John, because can you remember when Cookie and that first approached you way back when this project started? Because it's taken a lot of turns, and the government support's been crucial.
Look, I don't mind. I mean, there are greater people than me out there, mate, Scotty, you know, and it's not about getting your name on the project. It's just about being a part of it. And for me, there's nothing better than to be a part of something so special for the Geelong and the state. And for me, that is my name recognition on there, because I know personally the hard work that went into not just me, but collective in terms of making this a reality. And, you know, it's fantastic. It's, you know, we're going to have so many great events at that stadium, not to mention increased amount of games and hopefully a final at Cadinia Park. So it's all
good. Let's hope that's locked in, John. We want that home there, but also those home games, super important to not just for the team, but also just for the community as
absolutely.
Footy and footy crowds are allowed back into Geelong. We're going to let you go. Before we do, I do just want to give a couple of the details for our listeners. If you want to sign up for that event that John is an ambassador for, the commitment he's made, the personal commitment to walk 27 times across 27 days from the 1st to the 27th of October, www.27forparkinsons.org.au. Create your own fundraising page, join a team, create your own team name, have some fun with it as well, but get out there and support a really good cause. John, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story and your battle and your challenges coming up, no doubt. The way that you've attacked everything in your life, you will attack Parkinson's as well. So really appreciate you having a chat with us.
Thanks very much, guys.
Thanks, John.
Hi, it's Joel Selwood from the Cats. While we all support different footy teams, one thing we can all get behind is making good environmental choices. Momentum Energy is owned by Australia's largest generator of renewable energy. So supporting them means you're supporting Aussie renewables. So make the right call by joining today at momentumenergy.com.au.
Welcome back. It is great to have you with us. You're listening to the Final Bell, brought to you by Panther Tyres, but also really appreciate the support throughout the year of GMHBA. And it's important to stay healthy while staying at home. That's why GMHBA have partnered with Kesa. If you're a GMHBA member with extras cover, you can access telehealth or in-centre physio from the team at Kesa with no out-of-pocket expenses up to your annual limits until September 30. Waiting periods and sub-limits apply. Search GMHBA Kesa for details and stay healthier at home. It is time for your questions, and we really love hearing from all of our listeners throughout the whole season, throughout the crazy COVID shutdown. It's great to have the interaction with so many wonderful supporters. Right across the competition, and of course we're biased, we love the Cats members and supporters the best, but gee, the members across the comp have stayed strong. The competition and club lands are in such better shape than what we thought they might have been once that first shutdown happened. I think something like 85 or whatever the number is, percent of members stayed on board. It's remarkable the support that all the members, and in particular for us, the Cats members, have shown throughout this season. So huge thank you. Keep your questions coming in right throughout the finals too. We'll get to as many as we can. Stokesy, you've hinted at this one a little bit already, but just maybe a couple of specifics for Caleb. He asked, what changes might we expect Kenny Hinkley to try out this time around? You spoke about exposing the Geelong defenders. Kenny will try and do that. Well, do you reckon there'll be many positional changes? I'm assuming they won't be as obvious as kick at the Dixon every time they go long. Yep. What else are you thinking?
I think what they'll try and do is they'll try and create that, give them that spare kick. So I'm not trying to say I know ins and outs of football, but the way that I see that the footy club Geelong have been exposed over probably the last couple of weeks is that we give them to position, so we're going backwards with the ball. So we take a mark on the half-back flank, we kick the ball another 10 metres back and back to another defender, and then we give it to a position where we just kick it down to a contest on the half-back flank or the wing, and it's a shotgun rebound from the port into an open forward line. I think where our back line is so good at is when they can control the speed of the ball coming into the forward line and being able to help each other off their own man. To be honest, with Port, I think they've got too many dangers. They've got too many weapons in that forward line. All you have to do is say Dixon and Gray. Gray is a phenomenal player. Obviously getting a little bit older, but Jesus Christ, at our Oval first final, the ball gets to ground, we're in trouble. And Tom Papley showed that on the weekend. I mean, Mark O'Connor has been a hell of a player this year, a hell of a player. So for Papley to be able to get off that chain and be able to kick one goal, four or five, I mean, that just shows you that if you can get it into an open forward line, you're going to be able to get some shots on goal.
Stokesy, don't sell yourself short with your ability to analyse the game. That was perfect, because what I noticed with Richmond, and Sydney did it at times too, is they invited Geelong that first kick to go backwards, and maybe even the second kick to go backwards. But the second that it went backwards, that's when they then came and pushed up hard onto Geelong. So they couldn't go backwards and then once forward and then just work it down and control it all the way. It was allow that one and then bang, let's close up on them now. And then there's only one option then. It's kicking long to a contest, but from a position that's further back than from where you started the original play. And unfortunately, breaks down. So spot on, Stokesy. Hopefully, Caleb, that one answers that question for you. Tristan asks, and Scotty, maybe as a slightly less biased observer of the game on the weekend.
I'm a neutral observer.
Yeah, Stokesy and I emotions get high at times. Tristan asks, what's everyone's biggest concern coming out of the Sydney game?
Well, my concern, it's in the head, the attitude of this team. Like the Richmond, and I'll come to Sydney. Richmond game, they were negative in their attitude. They were almost scared, didn't take the game on, and then Richmond just played with them. Sydney, was sloppy, you know, oh, why are we here, sort of trudging around. Again, mindset. We know the way to play. They've seen it. They've done it this year. My biggest concern is the negativity and the fear of losing rather than going out there and win. That's the problem with this group. We know what's happened the last few finals campaigns. That's their biggest hurdle. They have to be positive from bounce one. Port Adelaide's got a backline can be exposed as much as Geelong. So why don't you hit it with everything? I mean, that's what I'd be selling this team all week.
I like the sounds of that, Scotty. Throw in something else with Port Adelaide. They will be on to the fact that Cleary cannot be caught in a one-on-one with Tom Hawkins. It might be Jonas this time around. So they'll be looking to come third man up every single time on Hawkins, given what he did to them last time.
So start Dangerfield and Rowan in dangerous spots.
Yeah. So get the ball flying down there, which can create the one-on-one, but also, have other weapons up there. And that probably leads into Joel's question here, which I think I've covered. Jump in if you want to add anything else to this, guys. But Joel asks, thoughts on playing Paddy Dangerfield forward in the first quarter against Port? Joel, absolutely. Absolutely. Even if he's... it was nice. You know what I love? Was Danger's goals on the weekend, his marks, were old school, starting on the last line, foot forward, just flat out leads. And everyone who had the ball within 70 or 80 of goals, just looking up. Old school Jason Dunstall leading out, just bang. Gary Ablett Senior, bang. It was old school full forward play from Danger. A bit more of that would be nice.
I think also with that too, the extension of that, Cameron, is just trusting your players. I mean, I go back to Clarko, Clarkson. I don't like referring to Hawthorn on this podcast, but he always trusted his players. So Cyril went there. Puppy went through there. Bruce went through the midfield. You still had the best midfielders of all time in Sam Mitchell, who was an absolute gun. You had Jordan Lewis. You had even in the earlier days, you had Chance Bateman. You had Hodgie go through there, Sean Burgoyne. But he always had made sure that Poppy was in there. Cyril, like I said, what happens when we go bad is we always resort back to what's always we think's always worked. But what's got us to a position that we're so dangerous is having trust in Atkins, having trust in Parford, all these guys to go through there and just allow them to do their job.
Do I have to shout this from the rooftops or is it just already given and maybe I shouldn't accept that it's just a given? Tom Atkins must play in the Geelong team in finals.
Agreed.
He makes so many other players better.
If he's physically ready, managed, whatever they called it, he has to play.
Because whatever the hell they want to call it, he plays.
They lacked the pressing, eh? Him and Close weren't there. There was a distinct lack of urgency around that side of the game. It's no coincidence.
At different times, and it's on your point, Stokesy, about trust. The Bulldogs game, coming back, Atkins went on ball. Now, he's not a 35-possession-a-game player. He doesn't just accumulate nice little possessions and everything like that. When he wins it, they're impactful because they're 50-50 balls that he turns into his ball, dishes out a creative handball and away we go. Or he's creating absolute havoc for the opposition. Tackle, chase, hand in, tackle again, bang, bang, bang. Doing all this work that others either aren't as good at or don't really want to do, to put it bluntly, he does it. They must get him back in there. That's my rant.
I agree with that, Cameron. Amen.
last one here is from Emmy. And we might have touched on it a little earlier, Emmy, but maybe we just go back to it again. Scotty, you've usually got your ear to the ground. Will we see Stanley again this season? I said he'd get first go if he's right. Is he right, Scotty?
I think so. The week's going to help him. So I would envisage he's usually pretty good fresh. That's the go. Play Stanley. Sav misses out. But I think the belief is he'll get up.
Okay. Good news there. Hopefully that answers it, Emmy. We think we will see him again and more than likely in that first final against Port Adelaide, which is Thursday night at the Adelaide Oval. Next week's podcast, we'll do a bit more of a deep dive on that game and preview it. But righto, guys, I've got the stack hat on. The 40. Oh, congratulations, first of all, to Grian Myers, named in the best 22 under 22 team. Good news for him.
Jack Henry, no, nothing.
No. the All-Australian 40 was announced. The team will be announced on Thursday along with the Rising Star. And congrats to Scotty Pendlebury, voted best captain by the players. I think Dane Rampey was most courageous. Caleb Sarong, best first-year player. So awards are starting to happen.
Top starting.
40 All-Australians, Stacey. Who you got an issue with?
There's a few. I think the one glaring out of our team, he didn't have a great game on the weekend, but Mitch Duncan out of the 40. I think if I was to rank those group of players, I think they all thoroughly deserve the top 40 out of our team. But I think he's probably the more important out of Menegola and Guthrie. I'll take that back. Sorry, Guthrie is number one, but I'd rather Mitch Duncan in that 40 than Sam Menegola. Not taking anything away from Sam Menegola on this at all. But I'm just trying to say that in a team that it's all about if you can hit targets and you can open up, Tom Hawkins wouldn't have the year that he had without Mitch Duncan. That's what I'm saying.
Agree with that.
I had to fight and scratch and claw to get five in the 40. I was pushing uphill. I had him briefly, I reckon, in the 40, Mitch Duncan. But then the baseball bat started coming and there were weapons getting thrown at me from the other panel members. And we came up with the best 40 we possibly could. It is an interesting process because, I mean, I do two, sometimes three games a weekend. I get a lot of footy. Will be a team to go by where I won't do a deep dive on that team because of the different games that you're doing. So a certain player's month can go by where I don't see it, but others watch them more closely because of the games that they work at or because of the states they're based in. It's always a very interesting process of who's seen who do what.
And surely Jordan Ridley, like, mate, he's had a great year in an Essendon team that's been pretty putrid. Like, come on, man.
Like, correct.
Didn't he win the best and fairest for the Bombers?
Oh, and that's... Bombers, thank you. Appreciate what you've done for me for my 1 year. But that was a year from hell. No one played well on that team for the whole year. They pretty much were borderline disgraceful, some parts of it. And you put a 20...
The second half of the year was disgraceful. The first half of the year, they were still in finals contention.
Oh, come on.
Come on, Cameron.
Continuing that theme, Stokesy.
What's
Hawthorn,
that?
Continuing your theme. Jack Gunston. Hawthorn had the year from hell. Jack Gunston.
He came runner up in the Coleman.
Jack Gunston. No, he didn't.
He came third, sorry. What?
Well, that doesn't mean it's not all about stats, Cameron. It's about impacting games and results.
Who else have I got here, Cameron?
It's not Jack Gunston's fault that nobody else could play in his team.
Nick Haynes is there on reputation.
Oh, Nick Haynes.
He's there on reputation, Cameron.
Hang on. Now, Jack Gunston. Tom Hawkins wins the Coleman on 42. Charlie Dixon second on 32. Yeah. Jack Gunston third on 31. He's a goal behind Charlie Dixon.
So who cares? Look at the impact he had on the results of games. I can see the goal screen and get a couple of...
It's not his fault he hasn't got any other players.
It's not a rite of passage that the third goal kicker gets in the All-Australian 40. You know you're wrong there.
31 goals for a year for a forward that's a target isn't anything to hang your hat on, Cameron.
Well, Charlie Dixon kicked 32. He
impacted games. He won games. He changed the way they played. Nick Haynes is on rep. Stokesy, agree?
Yeah, I agree. Tom Jonas?
Oh, he's there making up numbers for the ladder leader, isn't he?
Hopefully he's not in that final 22.
Zach Butters?
Who? Nah, I'm with him. I like him.
He's a nice player. He's a good player, Stokesy.
Is he in the best four players in the comp? Can just do what the other forwards don't want to do, you know. Tommy Hawkins doesn't want to mess up his hair and he's, you know, beautiful looks. You've got to have someone to grub.
And hang on a second. So, Nick Haynes takes intercept marks. So, he actually marks the foot. He doesn't just punch the ball.
Jack Gunston
kicks goals. Zach Butters kicks goals and plays forward. Well, you don't want any player actually plays attacking instinctive footy, Scotty. You just want a bunch of dour defenders.
Cameron, you know I'm all about excitement, but I'm all about
hit the boundary.
I'm not all about going with reputation and just picking people to keep clubs happy. I pick people on merit, not statistics. Andrew Gaff, talk to me about him.
In the 40.
Yeah, happy to have him in the 40. Okay.
In the 40 in place of the four or five names you've said shouldn't be in there.
I'm with Gaff. I think he should be in the 40. But also, too, I look at the small forwards. Obviously, I played small forward as my career. So I look very strongly that some of the numbers that you have in there, they got those goals over probably about a six-week period. So I think all Australians should be a consistent output of a high-end for at least 16 of 18 games. You've got...
Okay, forget...
Hang on, let me finish, Mr. You have a couple of small forwards in there who have probably only averaged just over a goal a game. So Stevie J should have got 10 All-Australians from going on what you've done here. Is that they've? If you took out six of their best games, they're probably averaging half a goal a game. I'm not going to mention their names, but there's two of them.
Okay. I've got a question for you. Forget the 40, because really, I mean, nobody has on their resume, I made a couple of 40s. All Australian team. Who's your small forward?
Liam Ryan.
What's that?
Liam Ryan, yours as well.
Liam Ryan. And I'm going to back you in here, Cameron. I'd put Butters in there because I think you need someone in that forward line, in an All Australian, who is one of the first picked at his team because he does what other players don't want to do. And then you can fill it up with a Danger. A Dusty,
Petrarca, all those guys.
Oh, geez, that'd be a nice half forward, wouldn't it?
Danger and Dusty played such big chunks of time forward this year, so they would certainly be in that conversation. Okay, I'm hearing some nice feedback here.
Matt Tabanagh. Okay, he kicked a goal in every game for a while. Fremantle finished 13th or something, 14th, wherever they finished. Matt Tabanagh.
Yeah. Okay. Who would you have in ahead of Matt Tabanagh?
Well, I don't know whether you need. What are your forwards? Dixon and Hawkins are locks. Who else do you need to put in as a tall forward just for the fun of it?
Hey, you still got to get your 40, Scotty.
Aaron Norton.
Oh, well, he's going to. Correct. Aaron Norton should have been there clearly on ability only.
I think I'll go into bat for you a little bit, Cameron, with Tabanagh and Gunston, now that I'm really thinking about it, to be able to contribute the 28 to 31 goals for both those two in shit teams is a fairly good effort.
I can't believe
he understands it.
Stokesy's
point's a good one. A 30-goal season in going back a few years ago when Stokesy running around and Stevie running around and go, it's not a great return. Would have been 28 All-Australian. But this is a different year where the Coleman medal winner is kicked 42. So a 30-goal year is a good year.
I understand that. Still doesn't have to be in squads.
I'm only certain too, Cameron. I wouldn't imagine how hard that... and even just dealing with Jacko. I mean, I dealt with Jacko for a couple of weeks in bloody New Zealand. That was hard enough. So to fight with that bloke over him and his love for the Western Australian boys would be an absolute nightmare. So Jacko, stuff off, mate.
Jacko comes armed with his notes from the Eagles and the Dockers, and he knows that the next 12 months of his life are either really easy or really hard, depending on who he gets in the All-Australian team. So he fights hard. He's good at it.
He'd only spend his whole time on the boat going abalone diving. So he didn't watch any games of football.
Any other ones you got issues with?
Oh, no. Well...
Who's going to win Rising Star, Scotland?
Well, it should be Matt Rowell, but he's not going to, because he'll get the most Brownlow votes.
Can we just let the kid be a kid too? Like, I hate the way the Gold Coast is sort of...
Oh, no. It's a bit much, isn't it?
Who's going to win the Rising Star, you two?
Sarong will win it.
Stokes?
Yeah, Sarong, yeah. I'm with Scotty there. One thing I'd say is I owe you a beer for putting Mark Blitzovs in. For a bloke who plays in so many different positions and the impact that he's had on our club, whether he makes the final 22, I believe he should. I'm a firm believer that there is no one that can have an impact like he does on the team from a array of different positions. So, Cameron, I know you would have fought hammer and tongs for him, so thank you.
You're welcome, Matthew. You're welcome. I sort of got you around a little bit. Scotty's just being stubborn. He wants 10 blokes taken out but won't offer anyone coming in, which is rare.
I've got to keep you blokes in check.
I'm sure next week, on next week's podcast, we will be previewing the Cats Port Adelaide final.
We'll be
we will know the final team by then. The boys will unleash on me. We'll know the Rising Star winner. We'll have a good indication when we record it of what the Cats team will be. So we'll have plenty to talk about on next week's podcast. Thank you to all the listeners for the questions. If you want to support John Aaron too and help the fight against Parkinson's, please jump on the website and join in that fundraiser. Scotty, thank you. Stokesy, thank you. Enjoy the weekend off, gents.
Will do.
Will do. Thanks, Cameron.
We will be back next week.